Yeah, thank you for this condensed introduction. So does anybody of you know a country that grants a partner country or a neighboring country access, direct access to their police database? I assume not. So sometimes they have common databases, but giving access to very sensitive data like biometrics of your citizens, for example, is something that, to my knowledge, no country does. We are talking about police, not Secret Service. But this is what the USA wants, to conclude an enforced border partnership, they call it, like border security partnership. And it contains core data, like personal data, and fingerprints and facial images, what the US authorities wants to access. And we have only limited information about that. So there are some EU documents that State Watch published where they explain a little bit the scope. And I will also explain later why State Watch has these documents, because it's an EU thing. And according to this document, it's about immigration data and criminal history information. So two parts. It's a new requirement in the visa waiver program. The visa waiver program grants visa-free access for a limited time of stay. So it's 19 days that you can stay in the US without need to apply for a visa. It's bi-directional. So all the partner countries, which are, I'm not sure if it's still 43, but it's more than 40 countries that have this partnership. So also US citizens can, of course, travel to those countries without applying for a visa. The demand is that, or the threat is, if they don't conclude this this agreement, they will leave. They will lose the status of VWP partner country. The interesting thing is, one would think that it's a new idea of the Trump administration, but it came up in 2022. So obviously, it was under the President Biden and its administration. It's not only affecting people in the visa waiver program. It's also for everybody who applies for a visa from most, from all the other countries. They should also, so in these cases, the access should also work. Or, that is the wording of one of the EU documents, in border and migration contexts. And of course, this is very broad. So we can talk about that later. Bahrain was a country, I don't think it was the first one, but the one that is known, they concluded already such an agreement that was in September. And this is a quote from when the ministry, Minister of Homeland Security went there and held a speech. So you can see that it's again on organized crime, terrorism, drug trafficking, trafficking of human beings, and it's saying automated exchange of biometric data, so automated. And the important thing is also it's to prevent blah, 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 blah from traveling to and obtaining benefits in the US. Benefits could be visa. But it could also be other benefits. So I just explained this because it shows the broad scope of the so-called partnership. It is not the first restriction. So in 2006, there was the requirement of biometric passports, which is actually, I mean, at that time, more and more countries introduced that. So that was, I would say, you could call it a kind of update of the visa waiver program. In 2008, the ESTA was introduced. So for those of you who had been in the US, the ESTA, you have to kind of register in beforehand, before traveling. So this is not to compare with the visa. The European Union is at the moment introducing next year the same system for the EU as well. And then afterwards, there were so-called PCSC, so to combat serious crime agreements among criminal police. So there is already a data exchange of biometric data, fingerprints and DNA. So as far as we know, no facial images, or as far as I know. But this is on a hit-no-hit basis. Hit-no-hit means first you ask, is there a data set? And if you receive a yes, then you can apply for the data set. And apply means, well, for whatever you need it, it could mean also a court order. So, and this takes time, this takes days or even weeks. This is not what the US wants. So I asked it already in my introduction. So this kind of access is unprecedented. So that doesn't exist even in the EU, not even among partner countries. So they have similar databases. They have common databases, of course, where they put data to share into. But to give access to all of the data, the police biometric data of suspects and immigrants the police has, is totally unprecedented. Just to get an idea, this is the German database in Pool, and it contains around 6 million people with around 8 million data sets. Here I'm only counting facial images, not fingerprints. So this would be the database that the US wants. So it's criminal records, even if most of the people are suspects. So that doesn't mean that everybody here was sentenced. And you can also see that the amount of data is growing yearly in this database. So this is also because facial recognition in Germany is also more and more a thing. And this is the database that probably the US would want to access in Germany. Now the plan is that the European Union, that means the Commission, will negotiate a framework agreement. A framework agreement is like, it's a frame, and with all the countries have to make like bilateral extra agreements for transposing the framework contract. The negotiations didn't start yet, but the Council, which are the 27 member states, they gave green light before Christmas. So in the upcoming weeks, the EU Commission will start negotiating. The talks already started. So at least 1 year ago, they opened a call, so-called like technical dialogue. So the channels are already there. So it's also on the table what both sides want, or what one side wants, what the other side offers. And one of the conditions that the EU wants to set is that also EU states should receive access to US data. But in the US, there is no such a central database like, for example, in Germany. So the German INPOL database, it's feeded by the 16 federal states. It's a central database run by the BKA, the Federal Criminal Police. And this is not happening. This is not existing in the US. So many states have their own databases. And the FBI has a database, but it's not like a countrywide of all the suspects, for example, or all the migrants, like immigrants. And it's also very questionable that the Trump administration, if there would be such a database in the US, would grant access. It is disputed that the EU Commission is now negotiating the agreement because the EU sees it as part of the visa regime, which the EU Commission is responsible for. For those of you who are a bit familiar with the EU, so the Commission cannot deal with everything; they can only deal with what is laid down in the EU treaties, and visa affairs is flagged as something that the Commission is responsible for. And so the Commission says, like, as it is concerning the visa waiver program, and it's an extra condition, so it's up to us to negotiate it. But the thing is that there are some countries who are not part of the VWP, like, for example, Cyprus or Romania or Bulgaria. So, and the EU Commission is lacking to put pressure on the US to include these three countries. And then they might talk about that it's to enhance this agreement. The problem is also the existing frameworks of data exchange will definitely not match what the US wants. So there is a police framework agreement under which this data that I mentioned before, criminal records in case of police investigations, so hit, no hit, court order. But this is only for law enforcement, like police. So we are talking here about border police or border authorities. And definitely the GDPR will also not cover what the US wants. The European Data Protection Supervisor issued an opinion this year. You can also find it in the internet. And he said what they always say, like there needs to be a comprehensive assessment in beforehand. It should be definitely limited to travelers. So the US should not get access to people who are not showing up at the border. They should exclude mass queries, for example, and they should put in place routines for like transparency and juridical redress. So to summarize, he said, you can do it if you behave. A few words, what's going on in the US at the moment. So there is a big expansion of the use of biometrics anyway. So not only at borders, but in the field of borders, in air, sea, and land. So, I mean, I'm not an expert about the US. This is what I read in beforehand in preparation for my articles. So it's something that needs to be investigated from the US side, if somebody's listening. But what I found out is that, for example, also several pilot projects that introduced the technology already, they now become permanent infrastructure. You see here the companies, or some of you, or some of those might be known, at least Palantir. As far as I learned, in terms of facial recognition, Palantir received the smaller contract. So this is the order of the amount of money that that the companies received. Also, the ESTA rules. So ESTA is this registration that you have to do even if you are from a VWP partner country. Also, this is being extended. So previously, you had to give your facial images at the border or from the chip of your passport. And if you use the app, the ESTA app, then also geolocation is being collected. And this is now mandatory. So people have to use the app. And also, when entering the US, giving their phone numbers, giving their social media, that is collected from the order, this executive order, or how it's called. It's also public. They say you also have to give the phone numbers of your family members. I mean, I really don't know how they will manage. I assume it's like what they can ask for. It's hopefully not what everybody always have to give. And if feasible, face, fingerprints, DNA, and iris scan. So this is only the ESTA. Then you have to use the app. The app means that you then take a selfie for the facial image. So you don't give it at the border anymore. You can you upload it with the app. And as I said before, it's running with geolocation as well. This is another app. It's a bit similar. This is an app for asylum seekers. So before, the name was CBP1. When Trump came into power, very quickly he renamed it, and now it's CBP Home. As far as I understood, it's basically the same app. They just reconfigured it. So Biden introduced it for requesting asylum. So if you want to claim asylum in the US, you have to do it from Mexico. With the app, with the CBP One app, you could ask for an appointment, and then you are kind of escorted in the US, have your hearing, and then escorted back. And then you wait for your asylum case. The problem was that very often this didn't work out. So people, first of all, needed a mobile phone for making this appointment. Second, it crashed very often. There was no internet connection, etc. pp. But when Trump came into power, they switched it off. You cannot make asylum case appointments anymore. And they renamed the app, and they gave it a new feature, the intent to depart. The German word is really ugly. It's Selbstabschiebung. So you can, to prevent your deportation, you can click that you want to leave the country anyway. Then you agree, for example, for geolocation tracking. And the benefit you have, you will not be arrested, or you will not get a bracelet or something for geolocation. So this is when the app was named from CBP One to CBP Home. This has nothing to do with the EBSP, but I just want to show the picture, what is happening at the US, and whom the EU Commission wants to give facial images and biometric data. Let this sink in. So this is taken from a collection that Financial Times, it's a research that the Financial Times did, so it's from December, it's 2 weeks old. I assume everybody of you heard about it or saw some of the videos. And these migrant hunters should have access to facial images and fingerprints also from asylum seekers in Germany. And they are also using facial recognition, so they have an extra app for that to scan the faces when they are raiding against immigrants. So these are the thugs, bandits, militias that would use the biometric data from more than 40 countries. This is just a very brief overview of recent articles, so they are all from the last weeks. Also, just to get an idea, it's really a thing. So many, many media in the US are also reporting about it. Yeah, and the deadline, it was already mentioned in the introduction. So the deadline is 31st of December 2026, given by the US, until when this border security partnership should be concluded. Otherwise, the country will be expelled. I do these talks since 2022. And of course, always, I mean, not very often, but once a year or something. And I'm always like, time is running. But now it's only 12 months. Now, for example, a country like Bahrain, they already concluded it. Now the EU Commission has green light for the framework agreement. And yeah, we should act. That's it. Thank you.
Right. Thank you for the talk. If you have questions, please line up now. Okay, well, microphone one.
Hi, thanks for the talk. But what can we do? Is there a petition we can sign, or what do we write to our politicians? What do we do?
I would park this question a little bit to the end, so perhaps we have other questions before. technical ones or comments. Also, as I said, I'm not very familiar with the US landscape. So if you found something that I explained a little bit not 100% correct, so please don't hesitate.
All right, microphone number two, please.
I thank you for the information. I'm pretty shocked. I haven't heard about this topic until now. And I would like to know if the European Parliament votes against a negotiation with the US, can the Commission still proceed?
Yeah, the procedure to include the European Parliament would be at the end. So if... So I'm not 100% sure if they would have to vote on that, but probably if the framework agreement is agreed with the Council or agreed with the Commission then presents a proposal to conclude by the Council, then it might go to the Parliament. And yeah, as I said, there are also many other agreements touched, like the GDPR, for example. So definitely the Parliament should have a vote on that. And I don't really know how they would react. I mean, the Parliament is not a firewall for civil rights. The Parliament is shifting more and more to the right. But of course, this is concerning national sovereignty, which also for the right-wing run states is a thing. So yeah. It will take long if the Parliament has to be included.
All right, maybe we can distribute to microphone number one. Let me put in a question very quickly. You brought us so much. Is there maybe something that you would like to comment before we go on? Because we got like a few more minutes for questions. So please take your time and expand if you want.
We can have some more questions.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Well then, let's go with microphone number one.
Yeah, thanks for the talk. I was mostly thinking that most often does the Council even have a mandate to refuse from entering this kind of negotiations? So does it give any information to us really that they have done that kind of technical pre-study and such? And then I'm also thinking, does the... for example, this implementation would probably come to Europol. And as far as I'm aware, Europol doesn't even have the competence of collecting data automatically from member states. So this would be like really almost coming to the Lisbon Agreement. So how do you see this kind of actually progressing?
What was the first part? It was about...
Does the Council have the mandate of even refusing to come to these kind of technical negotiations?
There is nothing to refuse, because if they refuse, then there will be no framework agreement.
Yeah.
And of course, this is something, pest or cholera. So would we want that the US is negotiating this agreement with only one country, each other, so 27 negotiations in parallel, or do we want to have a framework agreement which then covers all and you only need like a Umsetzungsabkommen, like a transposition agreement? So this is the only power the Council might have. And what you say about Europol, it's correct. So even Europol has no access, Europol, the federal, the European Criminal Police Agency, they don't have access to national states' data, and they are out. So this is not a thing here.
Thanks.
All right, we had a question from the internet.
Hi, the internet wants to know if you want to enter the US, you need this app for Esther, and... Mm-hmm. But if you don't have a compatible smartphone, what do you do? Can you use this system still?
Go to Canada.
All right, microphone number two.
Thanks for the talk. Under what procedure does this fall under? Will it require unanimity in the council? Will it require qualified majority? And would enhanced cooperation be possible for the member states?
Sorry, I didn't really get it. I'm sorry.
Under what procedure is this? Is it under unanimity, qualified majority, or will it allow for enhanced cooperation between the states? So how hard will it be for it to be adopted at the EU level?
I don't really get it. Excuse me.
Sorry, it's a bit of a technical question of the EU law.
Sorry, can we? Maybe you can discuss this later.
Yeah,
okay. And we're going to switch again to the internet because there's a lot of questions apparently.
Yeah, the internet likes to know. I've seen the word bilateral a few times. Could you talk about the asymmetry between the US and the European Union? So how the duties from both sides differ? One party has to share the data and the other doesn't have the obligation. Yeah.
This is totally unclear, and this is to be negotiated. So, and probably this will also not yet be concluded in the framework agreement. The framework agreement is probably only paving the way, and then you have it like in the agreement of the bilateral agreements, you have like which database will be accessed, by which authorities, for which occasions, how long can the US store the data, or are they allowed to make copies or not? So all of this will probably not in the framework agreement. This will be then in the following agreement. How much time do we have? Just to not forget this.
It's still about 12 minutes, so we
okay,
can.
Great.
Yeah. All right, microphone number one, let's go.
Thank you. We have rogue states also within the European Union who are interested in cooperating increasingly with the US. I'm interested to know two things. The first one, what do they know? Like, is it possible for them, members, like they want to avoid 27 negotiations, but how likely is it that some countries will be entering in agreements with the US bilaterally if this EU thing doesn't work out? That's the first thing. And second of all, can you talk a little bit more about the cooperation, like the data that's being shared within the country? Let's say, hypothetically, if I go to Hungary, do they have data on me that if I
Hungary,
ever,
for example?
For instance, because I know that this is a country that has increased cooperation with the Trump government. So this is just an example that I'm giving, but what do each country know within the EU? And second, how likely is it that countries will bilaterally enter with an agreement with the US? Thank you.
Question number one, I can only guess. So of course there are countries that we observe that are quite aligned with the US, for example, with a right-wing shift. Look at Hungary, the country you mentioned. And this could also be something that some countries kind of try to, sabotage. So for example, if the EU is negotiating a framework agreement and then Hungary is doing a bilateral agreement on their own, and they have the right to, of course. There's nothing, they wouldn't breach any treaty or something if they would do, to my understanding. For example, Italy could conclude something like this. As far as I know, the UK is also very advanced. I think they didn't conclude it yet, but they want it. So there will be an agreement, which is, I mean, they are quite aligned, as we know. And about Hungary, or what other countries in the EU know about you, for example, or somebody, that's what I said. They have common databases on asylum seekers, asylum applications, people who have like arrest warrants or secret warrants, or missed persons, children and adults. So this kind of shared database they have. And if you are a known activist considered to be an extremist in your country, then they can flag you in the European Schengen information system. And if then are in a police control in Germany, they report it to Hungary, for example.
All right, microphone number two.
All right. I was just wondering if the option to terminate the visa waiver agreement is an option.
Definitely. I mean, I think we could now come also to the question: what we can do to not miss it. And I think we really need a strong campaign of. probably all of you know about the chat control and the resistance that was at the end successful and was very broad. It covered not only like civil rights organizations, but also like companies, etc. And I think we definitely need something like this and quick. And I also think we should connect it to existing problems and struggles. In my opinion, this has a lot to do with the case of Rote Hilfe. So labeling Antifa a terrorist organization and then going for the Rote Hilfe in Germany and closing their bank accounts because they support Antifa in Germany, for example. And I think this is we must make these connections. We also must make these connections with migrant struggles. So what's going on there, it's affecting everybody. So it's fascism, it's unfolding fascism. And the demand should be not only to leave the visa waiver program, but also to suspend all the other police treaties that exist with the US, like the PCSC that I had been mentioning before. For example, that's actually the only way I see.
All right, we have another one from the internet.
Yeah, the internet likes to know, do you know, are there any, are you aware of forces pushing inside the EU which want to copy such a framework, especially regarding asylum seekers? Is there cooperation between those forces, like political parties, EU factions, etc.?
The question was to copy something like this within the EU, you mean?
Yeah.
No, definitely not. And that's what I wanted to highlight. That's really unprecedented. This is something that even the EU states don't do. So there is an enhancement for facial recognition. There is not a central database, but each country has like the input that I had been showing for Germany. They have fingerprints for their criminal suspects and asylum seekers. And German police, for example, can ask in Hungary for the facial image for the fingerprints of a person. But it's hit, no hit. So you ask, like, we found this fingerprint on a crime scene. Is this person known in Hungary, for example? And the EU has a system, it's called the Prüm system, Prüm treaty. So you don't have to make like 27, or it's covering all the Schengen states. You don't have to ask all the 30 states once, one after another. You can ask all of them at the same time. But it's a decentralized database, and you get 30 responses, yes or no. We have this fingerprint or we don't have it. And then the proceeding starts to receive the data. And this is now being upgraded for facial images as well. That means, by the way, some countries like Ireland or Portugal, to my knowledge, they don't have this facial images for the police. And now they have to install such databases to comply with the new Prüm treaty. But that's, let's say, the maximum. So there is no direct access, and there's also not even the idea. This is something that nobody would think on from the member states, because it's a question of sovereignty.
All right, let's continue with mic number one.
Yeah, Matthias, thanks for the talk first. Quick question. We know that the current US administration is very much about making deals, right? Do we know the commercial value of the travel in either direction, basically both tourism and business travel? So basically, would the EU go into this from a position of strength or weakness, you know, in terms of interest to keep the visa waiver program in place?
That's a very good question. I don't know. So I don't know about the money involved here. And of course, I mean, when I saw last week in Germany, when I don't know if all of you are familiar, but the Trump administration, they issued a travel ban against 5 Europeans. We could call them activists, but one of them is also an ex-EU commissioner who is definitely not an activist, but he was the enemy of activists. And two of them are Hate Aid. It's a trusted flagger under the DSA organization. And guess what the response of the German chancellor was? To counter it, he was like, we should seek a dialogue. So, and I wouldn't expect anything from the German government to put pressure, but this doesn't really 100% answer your question, no? Only the money part.
Well, to a point, yeah. I mean, but that would be my point. You know, I mean, if for example, the value of U.S. travel to Europe is higher than the other way around, then, of course, you know, it's much easier to negotiate that. Because this is what this guy's all about.
Yeah, but I think there are many other things in place. You mentioned, like, the pressure that the U.S. might impose. And, yeah, it could also be, like, a deal that, okay, let's give Trump this data, but then make him stop sucking in the Ukraine, or I don't know what kind of deals. But what I really want to say before time is running out, I think this really, really needs support from the US side. So we need people investigate what I investigated for the European side. We need people to deal with it from the US side. And there are great investigative media, and there are also civil rights organizations. So if any of you has contacts, so let's dig into it. Let's follow the negotiations from both sides. That's really important to me also.
All right, we have two more questions. One from the internet. Let's go.
Yeah. Do you know if that will retroactively apply to people in ESTA, which is still valid?
I didn't get it.
So is there a new system for applying? If you already got an ESTA before the new... I got this question. So, if you got an ESTA last year before Trump changed it, can you still use it?
I think nobody can say that, because it's something totally new. We just know about Bahrain, the political statements, and we don't know how this unfolds, or which old databases they transform into new ones, or if that was the question, if I understood correctly, then no idea.
Mm-hmm. All right, microphone number two for the last question.
Okay, as you said, the US can operate without a central police database. Why do we need Interpol or other central databases? Let's just get rid of them.
Why do we need it in Germany, you mean?
Yes, let's get rid of the central databases. Let's decentralize.
Yes. Thank you. And abolish police.
All right, with that, we are out of questions and out of time. Maybe, Matthias, you can tell us in the audience where we can find you after your talk and the next coming days.
I'm here after this, and you can also write me, and we can also make a meeting or something. I'm definitely interested in, kind of connecting struggles. This is what I mentioned like 5 minutes ago. So, of course, the civil rights organizations that exist in all the member states, but also like EDRI, for example, like the European ones. And we have to see coalitions also with other groups, with other spectrum. And the spectrum I find quite important here is migrant solidarity. And there is also, in Germany, for example, there's a huge, since many years, migrant self-organization. So, because everybody is concerned what's going on in the US, I showed you the videos. And first of all, this is addressed against migrants. So it's a racist, anti-migrant idea and technique being introduced, and so we have to resist it together with these people who will fall victim of that.
All right, and with that, we are out of time. Let's thank our speaker once more.